From the studios of Books in Motion, this is Rusty Nelson reading Our American West, Volume 2, by Gary McCarthy. Now let's begin with Volume 2 of Our American West, Chapter 1, Prairie Dogs, America's First Colonizers. If you stepped back in time over a century and were making the journey out west, you'd notice two major differences while crossing the Great Plains. The most obvious would be the herds of buffalo, but the second would be huge numbers of prairie dog colonies. Millions of these chattering little creatures riddled the plains from Texas to Montana. The amount of land they occupied boggles the mind. Early cattlemen tell of riding hundreds of miles across ground that was almost impassable because of the burrowing rodents. The first account of these immense colonies was offered by the Lewis and Clark Expedition in 1804, in which they were described as barking squirrels. The misnomer dog may have originated from this reference, and it is true that their shrill alarm call sounds like yek, 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 much like a small yappy dog. Recently, university researchers have discovered that the prairie dog has an amazingly diverse and even sophisticated vocabulary that they use depending on their circumstances. These amusing and always busy little critters are definitely rodents and fall into two major groups: the black-tailed dogs of the high plains and the white-tailed barkers of the mesas and southern meadows above 6,000 feet. Prairie dogs are about a foot long and weigh 2 or 3 pounds. Many sport pot bellies in late summer and early fall when they've pigged out all summer in preparation for winter. Prairie dogs do not hibernate, but they are smart enough to stay underground in foul weather. Even so, they will come up through snow if the winter sun is shining. Old-timers learned right away that when prairie dogs came out and began repairing or enlarging the little volcano-shaped walls around their holes, there was going to be rain. Even during real soakers, the prairie dog would build his protective dike high enough to keep his hole from flooding. Prairie dog holes were, and in some cases still are, the scourge of cattlemen and cowboys. No one knows how many hundreds of good cow ponies have stepped into a prairie dog hole and busted a leg. A prairie dog hole drops straight down about 8 feet before it levels off and branches out. Enraged by the loss of a good horse, a bitter cowboy would gladly waste his precious ammunition just to blow a prairie dog to kingdom come. It would, in the vernacular of Clint Eastwood, make his day. In my reading about the West, I find almost no one who didn't place the prairie dog in the same despised category as horseflies and mosquitoes. But in 1841, a famished Santa Fe wagon train was saved from likely starvation by devouring several huge colonies of the little critters and pronounced their meal a real feast. The Plains Indians also thought the furry varmints were pretty good eating, and their boys spent a lot of time sharpening their skills with bow and arrow by shooting prairie dogs. It just made sense that if you could drill a prairie dog at 20 yards, you sure ought to be able to plug a big old shaggy buffalo. Even before the turn of the century, when ranchers and cowboys began to eradicate them by the millions, prairie dogs must have thought they already had more than enough enemies. Eagles, hawks, and owls would swoop down from the sky and grab them with their talons. Because of this, a prairie dog will seldom venture more than 100 feet from the safety of his burrow. But when he does, he might return to discover that a rattlesnake has slithered down into his home, and the meeting would be deadly. If the prairie dog is warned by the sharp yips of his excited friends, they will all try to bury a rattlesnake who drops down into their burrow. Besides airborne dangers and rattlesnakes, the other two main predators are coyotes and badgers, and that's why the prairie dog keeps the vegetation grazed short in a huge